it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Monday night is always a little different, right? It's a special, always a special game because, you know, you're the only show on. Well, it used to be. Now we got double headers. So it definitely changes a little bit. But Monday is always special. You know, the entire league is watching. Your peers are watching as they're preparing for their next week. So that's always, you know, in the back of your mind.
That was D'Amico Ryans talking about Monday Night Football. It is a doubleheader, but it's one where there's not an overlap in this one. The Texans, yeah. They've got the floor to themselves on Monday night. Starting at 6 p.m., everybody. 6 p.m.
I'll tell you what, the one thing about the primetime games is from a player's perspective, if you have a good game on Monday night, or if for whatever reason the announcers have chosen to kind of highlight you on that day, maybe you did a pre-production interview with him or something. It is pretty cool that you get just a boatload of texts and voicemails the next day from people.
Yeah.
That like maybe you haven't heard from in a while or anything. That part is pretty cool. And even if you don't necessarily look at it as or you don't tell the media that you care about it, it's a warm fuzzy feeling.
There's 20 million people watching these games.
And it is when it comes to Pro Bowl and things like that, like when it comes to voting by your peers or anything else, people know what they see, and a lot more people watch Monday Night Football Thursday night. More people nationally are going to see a Texans game on Thursday Night Football, for instance, than they otherwise would.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's there's something to it. Whether you admit to it or not, there's a little bit of an ego boost and a little bit of pressure of just knowing that a lot of people that don't have NFL Sunday ticket that don't get a chance to watch you play are going to be watching you play.
It was funny because in the very same press conference, like four answers later, D'Amico's like, "Hey man, it's just football, you know, whether it's Sunday after." Like he has that answer about, "Yeah, it's really cool, Monday Night Football, and everybody's watching." And he's doing the right thing as a head coach. You do have to downplay it and remind your guys, like, no, it's do that whole Gene Hackman thing. Like, the field's still 100 yards.
Yeah.
You know, it's still first and 10, not first and 15.
Honestly, look, every coach wants guys. You want a team full of guys that play just the same in practice as they do in games. But, like, it's human nature. When you're on display, it's a different level of performance. That's why I like with runners. Runners do better when they have a rabbit. They're very, very mentally tough and everything, but when you get into a competition or if you have a rabbit, there's a social aspect to it that makes it different. So there is something about when you've got guys who are primetime performers, that's a real thing.
Okay.
And it does. It makes for fun environments.
Quantum Leap is the movie you were trying to think of, or the TV
Quantum
show.
Leap,
the TV
yeah.
show you were trying to think
As
of.
As I sometimes with these young baseball writers try to travel through time multiple times within one paragraph trying to figure out where the hell I am and what I'm doing. Yes, it felt like Quantum Leap, the
Seth,
TV show.
Seth, if you missed it in the opening segment, was trying to hop on an Atlanta-bound airplane with Chandler Rome to discuss the 42% odds the Astros currently have to win the American League West.
Yeah.
15 games remain.
Or 57 days ago when there were 22 games remaining somehow. That's the part that got me.
Yeah,
I was
yeah,
when
yeah.
it was 57 days ago... There were 22 games remaining. Yeah. That's why I was like, okay, why am I so dumb? Why can I not figure this out?
All right, so let's get to the Bucks, man. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. Tell us about your opponent on Monday night, D'Amico. The Tampa Bay. Damn you, Chandler. That Atlanta-bound plane is still in my head. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The Bucks are a really, really good team. Starting up with their front, Vita Vea is the guy that gets everything going. Adding Reddick on the outside, like really good group. Diaby, ton of great players, guys who can get after you in the running game, also in the passing game. Not only physical players, athletic guys who can swim gaps. Yeah, they do a really good job with their stunts on the interior. So tough job again up front, but that's every week in the NFL. So we have our work cut out for us.
What's your biggest concern with the Bucs defensively, Seth? Is it Vita Vea?
They blitz a lot. No, Vita Vea is a concern. There's two concerns. Vita Vea in the middle, because the Texans, they don't want to just run the ball. They'd like to be able to run the ball between the tackles.
Yeah.
Problem is Vita Vea, the nose tackle for the Bucs, just he's a space eater, but who's got pass rushing ability and everything. Yeah. He is peak male performance. You might not like the way it looks. You might look at him and think, I don't know, man. That guy's what is he, like 25% body fat? Yeah. Yeah. But he's out there with no gloves, no wrist tape, just out there throwing people around.
If,
yeah.
If he could play with no pads and no helmet, he would play with no pads and helmet.
And he probably would never get injured.
Right.
Yeah. But he's really, really good, and it's what the Texans would like to do is run between the tackles and help set up the play action, all of that. So that's the big challenge. But the bigger challenge as far as doing really devastating stuff, I think, overall, is that Todd Bowles will throw some exotic blitzes in. And the Texans did a better job in pass protection than it felt like immediately after the game. Wow. But there were still some hiccups with picking up blitzes and with getting the protection right. And then at times guys just getting beat physically. But it's that mental challenge of getting the protection right. And then CJ figuring out what the coverage is as the Bucs have disguised the blitz, have sent a guy off the edge when CJ might have thought it was coming from the other edge. It's a lot of the same challenges they had last week versus the Rams. I guess the one benefit is that A, the Texans have learned some lessons by what they did last week, and B, you've got at least 1 week. You've got 1 week of film on the Bucs, and then you've got a history with Todd Bowles, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. D'Amico talked about some of the individual.
I'm sorry. One more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bucs do not have the defensive line that the Rams did.
No,
I mean they've got Vita Vea, and the edge rusher whose name I still have to nail.
They signed Hassan Reddick in the offseason.
Yeah,
I know you're talking about a different guy.
It's not the same as the Rams. The Rams have just studs all over the place.
Yep. D'Amico talked about some of the individuals with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Was not planning on Emeka Ibuka being a problem in week two, but he was a problem in week one.
Ibuka, he shined in his opening game. He was explosive. He can catch the ball. He's a threat at all three levels of the field. That's where he shines. And everybody saw the two passes that he caught for touchdowns. Just an explosive player, fast. He moves all across the formation. So we definitely have to have eyes for Ibuka and also Mike Evans. We know those are their two top targets. Baker did a really nice job of finding those guys throughout that game.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Diaby, who I was talking about. But Ibuka, I'm trying to be really careful this week because they've got Ibuka and Diaby and all of these names that I'm going to screw up at some point. Ibuka lined up in the slot a lot last week, and that's exactly where the Texans had issues with Puka Nacua lining up in the slot. Puka Nacua lining up in the slot, but also because Davante Adams is there, it created some difficult matchups. So now you've got Ibuka. He's a rookie, but he was good last week. He's lined up in the slot, and he's offset by Mike Evans and trying to keep track of Mike Evans.
Do you Kamari Lassiter can play in the slot. Do you have Kamari Lassiter maybe follow him around a little bit?
So you got playing on the outside then. I mean, that's some. I don't know. I think they'll get they're doing things to try to keep Jalen Petrie from being stuck in so many bad situations. But when Stingley got injured, that was an issue. And then when you're when guys just aren't playing, like some of the things they're doing to help Petrie out, it doesn't help when Petrie's not making the right decisions or when just he's too focused on the run instead of Puka Nacua. Some of that's fixable. Like there's going to be times in any game where you either have, not an ideal matchup with your defensive backs, or you're going to have a linebacker, ended up on man on a – like, it happens. It's a matter of how you manage it.
Here's my question for you about Petrie. Are the issues with Petrie in coverage mental or physical? And what I mean by that is, on that last play on that 3rd and 8, he was overly aggressive and got out over his skis and got beat by 5 steps. Kid, is he physically capable of covering does he have the twitch and the explosiveness to cover these guys, or is it a mental?
Yeah, but he's got to be dialed in perfectly with his
mental
read. So it's both. Yeah. Like, he's not a cornerback.
Yeah.
There's not he just flat out isn't. So the Texans have to be really careful when they try to sometimes treat him like he's an actual slot corner or something. You can't do that with Petrie. So, but for Petrie, when they don't, the Texans don't ask him to do that all the time, but you got to be really mindful of the circumstances and the situation. So on that last play the Rams had, it's third and eight. Yeah. You know, they need a first down to win the game. If they run for 5 yards, then so be it. You gotta err on the side of on coverage on that play.
Yep.
So it's both. He's just got to be dialed in and not allow his weaknesses to hurt the team.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Baker Mayfield's been really good for a couple seasons now for the Bucs. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the Buccaneers quarterback.
Baker's done a really nice job. The thing that sets him apart, what I've seen him grow as a quarterback, is how he escapes the pocket, right? Whether that's keeping his eyes downfield to find open receivers or just scrambling to get the first down. He does a really great job. He's gutsy. He has all everything you want in a quarterback, tough guy. He scrambles to make plays, run and pass. So you just have to play together. And that's what we preach all the time, is the rush, staying after it, playing together, and our guys in coverage, we have to make sure we're plastering and staying in coverage, covering the guys twice, but because we know he can escape from anywhere.
Boy, what a great reclamation project that's been for the Bucs. They signed him that year that they played the Texans. 2 years ago, Seth, he was on a one-year, $4 million contract, Baker Mayfield. Yeah. I mean, that's been a huge success story for them.
And I think the big thing about him this year is you're waiting to see, all right, how much of it was also Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator for the Bucs last year, is now the head coach of the Jaguars, obviously. But their new offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Now their new offensive coordinator for the Bucs is Josh Grizzard.
Grizzard.
I assume he pronounces it Grizzard because Grizzard would sound too much like gizzard and that would be stupid.
Grizzard would sound like lizards, which is the bar that I like to hang out
at. That's
pretty,
that's true. Yeah, you could either go
the
with
same
lizard
way.
Or gizzard.
Yeah, with
so
two Z's, yeah.
He's kind of an unknown, and they did, I mean, Baker Mayfield threw for 3 touchdowns in the first game, but it's a little bit of a wild card right now as to whether Baker can be the same guy with that new offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Ibuka, and then Ibuka as well. Look, Ibuka had a good game, but he's still a rookie, and you don't want to have him have this continuation of a coming out party for Ibuka.
God, no.
against you. Yeah.
No. On the defensive side of the ball, we talked about playmakers on the defense. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Tampa Bay safety. I don't know if he still is, but at one point he was the highest paid safety in football within the last couple of years. Antoine Winfield.
Playmaker. Winfield is definitely a playmaker. Todd does a good job moving him around. He's a smart, versatile player. You can trust him. He moves around, put a lot on his plate. And he, man, that's the thing that jumps out to me. He's a playmaker. So we got to have eyes for him. And we just, at the end of the day, they have a lot of good playmakers. So you can't just watch, you know, one guy. They got a lot of guys on their defense. That's why they've been in good. They're a talented group. We just got to go out and execute our offense the proper way.
Yeah, there should be opportunities downfield if they can protect CJ. And I think, you know, D'Amico talked yesterday about some of the things CJ can do better, stepping up in the pocket for one. There were other times when he scrambled before he had to when there were guys open downfield and when he had a clean pocket. That's I think undoing some of the damage from last year. In terms of CJ's presence in the pocket, is only going to happen if he gets better pass protection.
Yeah.
And I think everybody yesterday was like bending over backwards to try to say that the offensive line did a pretty good job, this, that, the other. All right, like, look, they weren't as atrocious as it felt in the real moment. But let's not kid ourselves. Ariante Ursery got destroyed a bunch of times. And I'm not freaking out about it because he was a rookie playing on the right side after practicing most of training camp on the left side and playing in college on the left side. Like, that's going to happen. But, like, let's not sugarcoat it. There were some issues in pass protection. Cam Robinson, I don't care. You guys can throw me your PFF scores all day long. There were too many times where the pocket was compressing extremely quickly because Cam Robinson or others were just – they were getting beat. So it wasn't as bad as it felt in the moment, but it certainly wasn't good. So they got to hem up some of this stuff. And some of it was on – CJ in the call beforehand or in mental errors by the running backs, whatever it might be. But they gotta, if you want CJ to regain some of that composure in the pocket, you gotta give him some semblance of stability for him to do it.
There are just certain things that D'Amico will say or people from the team will say, and after last season, I just don't believe them. Which is, we went back and watched the offensive line, and it was the offensive line did a good job. They said the same things last year. Especially early in the season, even while the offensive line in the middle of the season was turning to trash, like real trash, like not moderate, like recyclable trash in the beginning of the year. This was like the trash you put in the other bin midway through the season, and they're still saying, well, the offensive line wasn't that bad. You know, we went back and watched it, and when we watched it, it was, dude. That quote D'Amico had yesterday, we heard 10 times last year. I don't believe anything anymore that they have to say when they go back and watch the offensive line. I just don't. I watched that game. The offensive line wasn't good. Now, I'm giving them a pass on getting angry about it because it's all new guys. You did this shuffle before the game that you can take or leave it. I don't know. And it's a new system and a new, everything's new. Everybody's doing their job for the first time. And so, and including CJ being the guy up at the line doing everything for the first time. So I'm not upset about it, but I'm getting a little upset that you're peeing on my leg and telling me that it's raining outside.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's and the encouraging thing about last week was when you watch a cut up of CJ's throws when he was under pressure, he made some brilliant throws.
Yes.
He still has all of that.
Yeah.
But as CJ himself will tell you, because he learned it from Tom Brady, and Tom Brady will tell you, is that it's really the simple stuff and the easy stuff, the mistakes you don't make. That's the stuff that really makes you a good quarterback and a good offense. And that's where they're just falling short. And it's not that far short. It's very fixable. It was one game with a new offensive coordinator, new parts, all of that. Like I'm not throwing in the towel on anything right now, but I got to recognize the issue for what it is. They've got to clean some of these things up.
Absolutely. No, you put it perfectly. That's what it, like, I'm here for it. I'm here for the improvement, but like, don't tell me how awesome it was. Like it wasn't good.
Ursary had a bunch of welcome to the NFL moments in that
like,
game.
And I'm not mad at him.
Ursary had moments where he may as well have not even had hands. And that's one of the biggest shocks to rookie offensive linemen when they play in the NFL is like, oh, what happened to my hands?
Yeah.
Like I used to, why are my hands not, what? I feel like I who amputated my arms right now?
because I'm
completely powerless in this moment. Yeah.
Right.
Like it's a different level of hand fighting.
Headlines are up next. Football talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's only $2.50 a month. Even I can do that math, a dumb radio host. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.